Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to give you a heads up that the Low Post and Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst are going to be doing post-game reaction shows together after each game of the NBA Finals. So be sure to check out their feeds for the very best analysis out there. Each game will be streaming live on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You can follow them as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players in the world, stepping away from the sport for a remarkable reason, to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Stream Breakaway now only on ESPN+. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what the hell is going on with the Olympics. Also, stories apparently you guys couldn't wait to tell about the terrible haircuts y'all got that one time. But first... All right, NBA Finals. First off, Gabe, welcome back. We missed you.
Good to be back, everyone.
Yeah, man. Can we tell the people why we missed you?
We can do that.
Gabe has relocated to Oregon. So he was with the moving trucks and everything else. Is why we were moving basically simultaneously. I moved to a different apartment. I ain't moved to a different place, but I moved to a different apartment. And then Gabe made the move out to Oregon. We wishing you the best on that one.
Thank you, man. We had this like level of synchrony that I did not quite anticipate.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, man, they got some cool laws over there. I'm just letting you know right now, man. They don't be throwing people in jail for that bullshit. I just want you to know. You know what I'm saying? But NBA Finals have kicked off. I don't know how much time you got to watch any of that in the course of transit and everything else, but I think these finals have been great. I got on Twitter yesterday and I made the point that I think for game has probably been the best finals since 2013. And everybody else got, you know, people just want to be 2016 would like to have a word. 2016 can't talk, fool, it's a number. Anyway, 2016 would like to talk. 2016 was just blowout, 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 blowout. We wound up with suspensions. Like, I think 2016 as a story was probably better and more interesting than the finals that we're talking about right now. But the actual basketball and watching it, I have just found this series to be really good. I thought it's been really well played. If you don't like 2013, because 2013 had its stretch of blowouts too, you could take it back. I think 2010 was a pretty good one game for game. 2011 was an interesting one because that was just LeBron like falling apart, you know, in the end when it came down to it. But the bottom line is people have been watching these playoffs. They've seemed to enjoy them. The discussion around them has been good. If it continues to go to form as to where we are between games 5 and 6, it seems to be a coronation of Giannis and a coronation of Giannis that's in an interesting fashion to me because all the weaknesses are still there, right? Like everything that everybody, oh man, he can't shoot free throws. Still not really that good at that, right? Doesn't have a perimeter game. He's 6'11 and strong as an ox. Like you'd be happy if he had a perimeter game, but the fact that he kept trying is a sign of how broken we are in some ways when we talk about basketball, that a guy that size was really out here trying to put in his work to be a 3-point shooter. There should never be no need for a dude like him to even think about taking 3-point shots. Like it shouldn't even come up that that's a thing that he wants to do. Like somehow, and I think part of this is just because of how good players have become, but you're not impressed by a 6'11 dude as strong as he is who can face the basket at all? Like, forget about the fact that he's facing it to take it in and, like, he doesn't have a whole bunch of moves off the dribble, right? Like, he's going, he's either spinning or he's going right past you. But I'll never forget this. Guys my age remember a dude named Chris Jackson, later known as Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, right? I ever tell you the story about the time my brother guarded him in a pickup game?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, so my brother went to Southern University in Baton Rouge in the same time that then Chris Jackson was playing at LSU. And he said he wound up at a pickup game at this spot called the Armory. And something happened, and he wound up on a switch with Chris Jackson directly across from him. And he understood, man, Chris Jackson really only had 2 moves. He was either going to cross you over, go through the legs and go by you, or cross you over, go through the legs and shoot a jumper. So he's like, cool, I'm going to just back up and, you know, let him do that cross. My brother said there wasn't no such thing as back it up far enough. He said next thing he knew, it was like Chris Jackson was in his shirt. And the next thing you know, like a shapeshifter, he had just gone straight through him and by him. Oh, see, you point out the elbows. Chris Jackson's like 6 foot, 160 pounds. And my brother, and you have met my brother, I believe, he is not 6 foot, 160 pounds. That's a big dude. But yo, sometimes you don't need a second move. Clyde Drexler did not need a left hand. All he had was a right hand. There's generations of NBA players who could only go right or only go left, and it doesn't matter because you can't do anything about it. So with Giannis, he's just going by you one way, and then he's going to try to spin the other way. And good luck if you can somehow stop it. Like, I talked to Charles Barkley once about playing in the post, and he was like, look, the truth is you need two moves and two counters. That's it. Like, you don't have to be Hakeem Olajuwon to be able to get all these things done. You don't. And so for Giannis, I think we got so locked in to what we thought he did not do well that for a stretch, we just ignored that he's been historically good these playoffs. And we have spent way more time talking about what he wasn't than talk about what he was. But then he made two of the most incredible plays that we have ever seen in the postseason. And the key to me about both of those is how late in the game both of them came. Like, keep it in mind, this is a dude who lay bent backwards not that long ago, right? But Kenny Smith on Inside the NBA makes a good point about Giannis. Like, one thing I really like about Inside the NBA, because I know a lot of you, you know, want to be basketball junkie types. Like, you want somebody out here trying to break this down to molecules and everything else. But sometimes the observations that matter are really just very simple ones. And so one thing Kenny always said about Giannis was, if he's not playing well, and he might not play well, but he's always going to play hard. No matter what, he's always going to play hard. What made that LeBron block in 2016 at the end of the game against, was it Iguodala went up for it? What made that so impressive really is, do you realize how hard he had to be playing to, after all that series, after all that carrying all those dudes, after coming back from 3-1, to at the end of a game, be able to take off and take it off the top of the square and then come back? And I'm telling you, I don't see how LeBron didn't break his arm. You remember that one when he came back the other way not too long after that and tried to bang on Draymond Green and Draymond just knocked him out the sky? Like, part of that is the athleticism, but a big part of that is just playing hard. You know, just having it in you to dig deep and go find that last little bit that you got. So when Giannis made that block on Ayton, which to me was so impressive, not just for the athleticism, but just the brilliance of the strategy of it, Giannis played the pick and roll. The oop goes up. Some of y'all want to say Devin Booker made a bad pass. I mean, maybe, but I think the pass he made was, let me get this up where nobody else could get it. He didn't reasonably expect that Giannis would be able to turn around, and then he didn't try to play the pass. He saw where Ayton was and played the man, played the ball, and then made that block. And one thing about it, when you look at it, Ayton was out of gas. Like, Ayton was out of gas. Giannis was not. Then you fast forward to the next game, and what, Jrue Holiday just bogarted the rock from Devin Booker. They come down the other way, and Giannis goes up and catches that oop playing it from behind. I can't imagine how tired he was at that point to then be able to do that, right? Like, I was actually, another fun, I was having a conversation with my brother. And my brother was talking about how, man, I don't want to treat Giannis like Cass be treating LeBron. And then he went straight to treating Giannis like Cass treat LeBron. He's like, I don't know. I just feel like I haven't seen him do it in the clutch. I'm like, well, yo, the thing about a guy like that is, it was the thing when LeBron first got to Miami, that a lot of what we associate is like what you do in the clutch and the kind of moves you make with the ball to get the baskets that LeBron wasn't built for yet. Dwayne was much better built for that. A smaller dude, a shiftier dude, you know, to get into those tight spaces when you need it. And for LeBron, if you take away the idea that somebody else might be open, I'm going to pass the ball, then that's his game. That's going to wind up limiting it. But there are other things that you can do in the clutch that matter, like block that shot, like run down the floor and catch that oop. And it happened, right? Jrue Holiday stepped his game up, and he just decided, I'm here to put the clamps on Chris Paul. And Gabe, did we talk about this? I can't remember if it was here or somewhere else where we talked about this, how people don't really like Chris Paul, but there's a like certain respect for Chris Paul. And so when Chris Paul got to the finals, there was a celebration of congratulations to Chris Paul for getting to the NBA finals. And everybody was all, you know, good for him, kind of charged up about that. And he gets out here, struggles for a couple games. And now we got a Chris Paul problem. ESPN Stats and Info, and I thought this was ridiculous of them to send out. And if somebody, you know, that work over there got a problem with it, you can come holler at me. But this is, I want you to hear this. Chris Paul is on the verge of becoming the first player to lose four best of seven series in which his team led 2-0. The only other player with three best of seven series losses in which his team led 2-0 is former teammate Blake Griffin. And I read that and I was like, damn, it's almost like one player isn't the team, right? Like this is Chris Paul. Individually, Chris Paul went up 2-0 and individually, Chris Paul lost this. What's interesting to me, though, about that stat, if you want to throw it out there, is that would ultimately doom the Clippers at their best seems to be part of the problem that Phoenix has, which is the Clippers, when Chris Paul was there, their starting lineup was the best lineup in the NBA, like on terms of plus minus. Their lineup in some years, like better than the Warriors when the Warriors were dominating the world, right? But when they went off of that, when they had to put anybody else in, the whole thing fell apart. They just didn't have the depth in order to get this done. The Suns are now at the point where they're basically a seven-player team now. They can basically only go seven deep. And so when they go to the next man off the bench, this thing gets wobbly for them. Now, granted, all the Suns starters have a positive plus-minus so far in this series other than Chris Paul, right? Like, you know, so you can definitely go there, but people act like this is an excuse, but this is the truth. Don't forget that dude just had the cooties not too long ago. Now, am I saying that explains his performance in the last few games? No. Am I saying that it might have something to do with what we're seeing? Yes. And that's a fair consideration. Remember, we talked about this when Cam Newton was out there and all these other guys that we've seen come back. What I've noticed is attention to detail stuff, little things like guys seem a little out of it. They tend to turn the ball over and make bad decisions that ordinarily we would not see them make previously. And I see that in Chris Paul. That might not be it, but if you come out of this feeling like Chris Paul is the reason why they lost this series, nah. Like Devin Booker, this is a thing on Devin Booker, and I know if we got any Suns fans who listen to this, we've already been through me and the Devin Booker thing, but I do think that this is a fair thing to point out and why y'all got to stop saying he Kobe, but why that's too far. First of all, we would have known it when he was 21, not when he's 24, 25. You know what I mean? Like Kobe demonstrated who he was pretty quick. Devin Booker's been coming out here putting up 40 on him, right? But what else did he do? And I'm not saying that, like, you know, if you put up 40 points, don't. I'm not acting like he didn't make a contribution, right? Like, I'm not acting like it wasn't a big deal. I'm not acting like he hasn't been wildly, even efficient in the way that he's done it. But we're talking about 40 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. I don't want to take 2 steals away from him. To be the guy that you're telling me Devin Booker is, you got to do more than that when you get the 40. You know, because one thing about Kobe was, time to put the clamps on somebody. If it comes down to it, like when Chris Middleton gets out here balling, if we talk about Kobe, now it's time for Kobe to get out here and put the clamps on Chris Middleton. I don't think anybody reasonably expects that from Devin Booker. I'll be honest. I don't have a sophisticated enough understanding of his game to be able to tell you how good of a defender he is under those circumstances. I'm not going to say that he's a poor defender because I really don't know. Like if we're all going to be honest about it, by and large, we got to take a lot of people's word for it when it comes to talking about how good somebody is on defense. And I'm not in the position to do that. But I've not seen him look like a dude that's putting the clamps on people, right? The guys that he would reasonably be guarding, they seem to be getting their buckets, you know, all of that. Phoenix is a player away. Like, it's been amazing that they got this far and good for them, certainly, that they got this far. But I think they're a player away. And that's what we've seen. I'll tell you something else that we've seen, too, that I think is noteworthy. This is the first time that I can think of since 2006 is the closest example, but it doesn't fully fit. But this is a whole bunch of dudes who've never been here before. So like the 2006 NBA Finals had Shaq. But when you really go up and down those rosters, it was a bunch of guys who hadn't been there before. But at least with Miami, for example, that year, they did have a bunch of dudes who'd been in the league, who'd seen some things, who'd been some places, right? Like you had those guys. But Dallas had a bunch of guys on that team also who hadn't been there before. It is very rare in the NBA Finals that you're going to wind up in a situation where this is brand new to everybody that they're at this level. And that's what we got with both teams. However, while Milwaukee doesn't have guys who've been here before, they got some dudes that's seen some things. They got some dudes that's been through some things. Like they went through that pain and everything that came with going up 2-0 to Toronto and then losing. They came up short last year and dealt with everything that happened. Phoenix is a bunch of dudes. Forget about who hadn't been here. Phoenix got a bunch of dudes who hadn't been to the playoffs other than Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. What are we talking about? And I think that those are the only two dudes who they have on the team who get any burn that are over 30 years old. Like, it's a really, really, really young team that we'll probably see come back, you know, stronger than they are now, but we'll probably see them come back around at some point. But they just got a bunch of guys that ain't been there before. And what Milwaukee has looked like, digging a little deeper in these last couple games, they've looked like a team that is like, okay, we know we can do this. We've seen the worst, and we know that we can keep on trucking. That's what they look like to me when they are out here. And that stuff matters. Like, those are the things you can't put in the spreadsheet that the numbers aren't going to give you or anything else. This is a whole nother level of what it is. Like, hey, for example, in our line of work, it's not like playing basketball or football or whatever it is, but you step up to different levels of the game, right? Like, you knew what it was like when you were producing or working at one place and then go to another and then go to another, and then you get on bigger projects. And what was good enough before ain't good enough now. You know, like, when you thought you'd worked as hard as you could and you realize actually you have to work harder, and you don't, it takes time for you to understand how to get to that point, to get to that next place, and to keep pushing through whatever that is. And Milwaukee has the guys that have seen this. Like, that's a grown team when you think about it. Like, some guys with some miles on them who've seen some things in the league. And I was watching, it was during game 4, I was texting with Vinny, and it felt the whole way through game 4, or much of game 4, where the Bucks like kept getting to like 3 points down, but they couldn't get over the hump, kept getting to 3 points down, but couldn't get over the hump. And it just felt like, I was like, man, it just feels like Phoenix right now. It feels like they're the better team, and that it's one of those where there's like a force field around a tie score, and these guys are going to keep getting there, and the Phoenix is going to keep stretching out. And then Milwaukee took the lead, and then Phoenix went back up by like 8. And then the Bucks dug deep, and they pushed that through. And they got it done. So who knows, man? This may all fall apart. They might not win it in game 6. But for me, this is what the NBA needed. We're building stars. It's going to be something new. It's something fresh. Breaking themselves from the LeBron addiction. All of that stuff. This has been great. This has been excellent. And I got news for you. The Bucks win this, Giannis is going to the top of the mountain. We have a hard time saying anybody's better than LeBron James. But what you going to say? 2 MVPs. He'll be the finals MVP. He's been a defensive player of the year. What else can he do? All right, guys. The Olympics are almost here. And Gabe, I don't know how much you've been reading about this, but our Japanese brothers and sisters want no parts of these Olympics. They do not want the Olympics at all. Here's how unpopular the idea of having the Olympics are. Because something that I think is easy for us to lose sight of in the United States is other places don't really have access to this vaccine. And Japan's population is not well vaccinated, which is particularly frightening given the population density, like especially in the bigger places. Like, I can just imagine what a chain reaction it is to set this stuff off. And so the Japanese, it's so bad that Toyota is a worldwide Olympic sponsor. And who knows how much money Toyota has spent to be a worldwide Olympic sponsor. Gabe, Toyota will not advertise during the Olympics in Japan.
That is astounding.
And they put out a statement where they're just like, yo, it was basically, we read the room and we heard you, right? Like, there's nothing good for us to say that we are the official car of this thing you hate. They just don't want it. They want no parts of it. And now we get into, you see somebody on the U.S. women's gymnastics team caught it. But the Today Show reported that it's not Simone Biles. This is tough because this thing costs a whole lot of money. And I know, man, a whole lot of y'all have made some dumb decisions in the course of quarantine because you already spent the money. Now, imagine that the sunk costs on this, what I looked up, I think it was $15 billion are the sunk costs on these Olympics for them. You know, and if they don't have the Olympics, then they get sued, basically, by the International Olympic Committee. This has turned out to be a colossal disaster for them. And look, I get trying to have it. I really, really do. Now they're taking all these steps. One of the things that they got, and I feel bad for all the journalists who don't get to write the fun story that come up every few years. You know that story, Gabe. A story about all the sex at the Olympic Village. Because you know what the Olympic Village is, like fundamentally what it comes down to, what the Olympics are? An out-of-town trip. I don't know how much we have talked about the out-of-town trip on this particular show, but you know what's up with the out-of-town trip. At every level of life, it starts with y'all's church camps and then moves all the way down the line. An out-of-town trip is an out-of-town trip is an out-of-town trip. I ain't gonna lie, because, you know, I didn't grow up going to church, so that meant that I never went to no church camp. And people would come back with them stories about church camps. And I couldn't tell if they was lying or not. But I was like, damn, that's what y'all doing? I thought y'all was going there for church. I guess they need something to get forgiven for by the time it's all said and done. But y'all got y'all stories about what was going on down at church camp. Everywhere go, work convention, you know what I'm saying? No matter what it is, the out-of-town trip, people just go to a different place. And so every year, somebody write a story about how they be getting it in the Olympic Village. And I think I saw a quote in one article, I'm pretty sure it was from Hope Solo, who was like, yeah, you've got all these young people at their athletic peaks. What do you think is going down, right? And so that's how it goes at the Olympic Village. But the problem is we got the COVID, okay? Paul Chelimo, who is a distance runner from, I believe he's from Kenya. By the way, Paul Chelimo, for those of you who got a little Olympic history under your belt, Gabe, I think you were too young for this because I'm pretty sure this happened in 92. I think Paul Chelimo was some kind of kin to a dude named Richard Chelimo who used to run the 10,000 meters. And one year he was running the 10,000 meters and he was like clearly should have been ahead of everybody. But there was a guy who was out there who wasn't any good, who was from Algeria, and he just kept running slow in the inside lane and Chelimo couldn't get around him. It got so bad one time that one of the laps, somebody tried to snatch the dude, but he hit the nitrous on him and literally tried to tackle him, but they hit the nitrous and so he couldn't get around him. And then Chelimo didn't win. But anyway, Paul Chelimo put up this picture on the internet. And it was of the cardboard bed that you sleep in at the Olympic Village. And he said that the reason they got that is so that only one person can be on it. So you can't have two people in the bed. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, these are largely people in their 20s. Needing a bed is a 35 plus scenario. You know what I'm saying? Like needing back support for these activities is a completely different ball game. Like if you think they're going to be like, damn, we can't have sex on the bed, I guess we're not going to have sex. Nah, dog. Not if that building got a balcony of some sort. People going to learn a whole lot about their competitors. I'm just telling you right now. The other thing that happens every year with the Olympic Village with regard to this is they typically got like a big old bowl of condoms, right? Just anybody need condoms? Because, you know, keep everything safe or whatever. And so they are now not offering the condoms. I make 2 points. Number one, they let you bring those through customs. You can bring your own. And number two, particularly of that age range, that ain't going to stop them. Like, it would be good if we had them. But I'm a gold medalist at crossing my fingers. Like, that's what somebody's in there. They willing to roll the dice on this. They willing to give it a run. They willing to give it a try. Like, all you're doing, you're not stopping sex. You just stop safe sex, baby. Because they still about to make it happen. You know why? Because going to the Olympics is a once-in-a-lifetime occasion. I see you fools out here risking it all for once-every-year occasions. You know what I'm saying? I see y'all out here rolling the dice, doing things y'all done a zillion times. At the Olympics? No. It ain't. I'm just telling you right now. There's some dude from one of these little countries. I don't even know which little country it is. You know what I'm saying? But one of them little countries. You pick one. You can pick it up. He going to be like, yo, I just met a gymnast for the first time in my life. I got to see what's up.
It's a once in a lifetime experience because you never know if you'll get back.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Right? Like, nah, man, everybody trying to come up with a story to tell. You withholding the prophylactics is not going to stop people from trying to come home with a story. Now, granted, they might come home with more than a story, but I'm just telling you, they're going to get out of there with a story one way or another. And we're going to watch it and it's going to be weird. You know what I'm saying? Like the idea that there's not a crowd at the Olympics, there's going to be an Olympics, like the opening ceremonies with no people. Yeah, like that's bizarre. Like why y'all even waving? You know, like why y'all even doing this? Like it's just... And I really feel bad. Now, granted, I think the Olympics is just a generally crooked endeavor for a number of reasons, but I feel bad for everybody involved, every single person involved. This wasn't what it was supposed to be. And it's a lot of people who worked their whole lives to get this opportunity. And it isn't what they thought they were getting. It isn't what they signed up for. And in fact, I would say like with some of them, man, they probably caught it and messed up their training and everything else. Like, this isn't what's up. This isn't what anybody wants it to be. I mean, hell, being the Olympics, it ain't what the Japanese want it to be. But here we are, man, because we're going to need that content, Gabe. That's going to be covered. That's the dog days of baseball, basketball going to be over. We're going to need these Olympics. I need y'all to rise above. I need y'all to do whatever it is. Like, please help us out, because otherwise I might need to take some time off work. I'm just saying, man, like, y'all don't understand this. And Gabe, you can attest to this. Sometimes, like even on this podcast, where we only got to come up with two things to talk about. Sometimes, man, it'd be hard to come up with two things that we could talk about for 10, 15 minutes each. That's not a simple endeavor.
No, but I imagine there will be plenty of stories out of this Olympics that will be like Olympics adjacent, even if there isn't like a really good sports story.
Yeah, that's what we're going to need. Because the other part too, man, like what we like in the Olympics is stuff that Americans are good at. You know, like that's what we really like. But the problem is Americans tend to be good at stuff that's not really conducive to talking. Because what I tell people about the Olympics, what you got to understand is like, especially from the standpoint of being a television property, the Olympics is sports for people who aren't sports fans. Like, that's why you're going to see all the touchy-feely human interest stories and everything else. Like, it is appealing to people who don't watch sports. That's why they put the U.S. men's basketball team when they play on this sports network rather than having them on the big network, because that's not what the Olympics are for people. It's not a chance to go see James Harden, right? It's a chance to go see this person that you kind of only, you know, hear from every 4 years, you know, all of that stuff. That's just kind of what the game is for the Olympics. But like, for example, Katie Ledecky. Wow, man, she's wild and impressive. Man, ain't nothing to talk about. I can't talk to you about these swimmers. Like, that's one thing that get on my nerves about the Olympics, man. Like, it's impressive that these people be doing all this swimming, but that ain't full. You know, come on, man. And whatever. You know, I'm just saying. We just want to get all, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan with it. You know what I'm saying? Ho, USA! Like, that's all we want to do. And that ain't necessarily helpful. So I need somebody to bring it. We need to learn about somebody new. And another thing, just right fast before we go, I'm just curious about this with regard to the Olympics. You tell me if you ever thought about this. You ever think the men's gymnasts be jealous? We don't really care about them at all.
Oh, no doubt. I don't know enough about gymnastics to know whether or not, from a capability standpoint, if they're doing the same sorts of moves that Simone Biles and other athletes of that ilk are pulling off, like the different sorts of flips and all that.
No, it's a strength. Men's gymnastics is much more about like upper body strength in particular, right? Like holding on to the rings and all of that stuff. Like it is more in line with that. Like that's what I was thinking when I talked about, you know, to somebody from one of the little countries that ain't never met a gymnast before in the Olympic Village. It's two kinds of gymnasts. It's the ones that be flipping around. It's the ones that can flip you. All depends on what you're into, baby.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from business.
This is Bill Chappell with NPR. A Utah gun company has stopped selling a Lego-themed pistol kit after a fierce public backlash and a request from the Danish toy maker to remove the product. The Block 19 is essentially a Glock that lets owners add their own sights and designs using Legos. When Culper Precision sewed off the design in late June, the company said, "Here's one of those childhood dreams coming to life, the Block 19 prototype. Yes, you can actually build Legos onto it." The kits retailed for around $600, the company said. But the Block 19 quickly provoked an intense reaction. Within the gun owner community, some said the pistol, whose bright red, yellow, and blue colors made it look like a toy, was just a bad idea and one that would bait gun control advocates. "This, if real, is the most irresponsible gun modification I've seen in a long time," one commenter said on the firearm blog. They called it perfect fodder for the Everytown for Gun Safety people. And they were right. The Everytown advocacy group took a very public position against the pistol. Shannon Watts, the founder of the related group Moms Demand Action, told the Washington Post that when she saw the gun, her initial thought was that it was sick and that children would die. Lego, the toy company, also had problems with the idea of combining its venerable plastic blocks with a lethal weapon. After getting in touch with Culper, Lego told NPR that the gun company agreed to remove the Block 19 from the market and to not make or sell anything like this in the future. Culper took down its product page for the pistol, but it's defending its idea to make a Lego gun in the first place. The company says it built the Block 19 as a welcoming gesture of friendship and inclusion, saying it was thinking of gun owners who are not into tactical pants and bravado. The advocacy group also notes that the Block 19 was created after a year in which deadly shootings involving children rose sharply. That includes a 31% increase in unintentional shooting deaths by children of themselves or others between March of 2020 and the end of the year.
That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. Who sat up there and was like, "Yo, we need a Lego get. How about, no, not the Glock, the Block 19. This went through channels. Like, this got to a point, there was nobody in there that was like, "Guys, I don't really know about this. Like Bill Simmons, he's always right about the vice president of common sense that every basketball team needs to have. There wasn't one person in there to be like, I don't know, man. I don't think this really going to go over the way y'all think it will. Like, I don't think. Wow. We are the dumbest country in the world. That's just the only conclusion that I can draw from that. Because see, and this is the thing for the gun companies, right? And this is like the danger of being corporate or whatever it is. One thing about guns that we don't talk about enough is they don't wear out. Like, they're kind of a remarkably well-made product. Like, a gun that was made 100 years ago will still do the job and it will still kill you. Like, think about that. I don't hear about it. Maybe I'm wrong about this, right? And I don't know. You guys can hit me the game if I'm not up on it. But you don't really hear about people like, yo, I got to go get a new gun. My last one wore out, right? That's not really how it works. Like, people can keep their guns forever, you know? Like, got a gun in the house that my granddaddy gave us, you know, that kind of thing. People keep guns forever. So the problem with that is, like Chris Rock said, Cadillac can make a car that lasts for 100 years, but then nobody gonna buy no new Cadillac, you know? So with guns, you have to just keep coming up with reasons to get people to buy more guns. Right. And like all these guns that we have in this country, they're not owned by that many people. It's a lot of people with a lot of guns, and they be buying guns like I bought sneakers. You know what I'm saying? Like, in fact, right now I'm going through, I don't know if it's a purge right now. I got a smaller place. I don't have room to keep all the shoes. So I'm still keeping a lot of shoes, but I'm probably like getting rid of 50, 60 pairs of shoes.
This might be as revelatory as like the, if you haven't heard we're doing right now.
Yes.
You're going to be offhanding 50 to 60 pairs.
Yes.
Where are these pairs going?
To the youth of Harlem.
That is noble as hell.
Yeah, I mean, because dude, I was just buying shoes because I could. Like, I came into money, right? And I bought all the shoes that I ever wanted. And then, like, I understand how these athletes and stuff buy a lot of shoes like that. Because you come up in this money, but if you don't really have expensive taste or you don't have these things you want, like, I don't want a boat. I don't want, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want those things. And the shoes cost like $150, $200. You know, it's just not a thing. Dog, I moved. I was like, well, never worn these before. Whoa, never even opened this box. Oh, wow. Like, you know, just all this stuff. People do that with guns. Like, the reason I'm bringing it up is people do that with guns. But you can't just take a box of guns to the Goodwill and be like, hey, guys, don't really need these guns anymore. You know, you don't do that. So people just have gun after gun after gun, and they just keep buying guns. And I swear they got all the technology on the guns because they have to keep coming up with ways. Let me tell you this about the gun that's been tried and true. Guns been killing people for about 300-400 years, right? Like, they were like, oh, we need to figure out how to make this gun more deadly. The only reason we know about them is because they're deadly. Like, it's not like people evolved to the point where our skin can repel bullets and you had to come up with new ones. They just have to keep coming up with new ways to sell you something that is as simple as it can possibly be. You shoot it and it kills people. That's it. Legos on my gun. You wouldn't feel like a buster. Like, imagine, you know what? And that's the thing about this Lego gun. That would be a bestseller with fake killers. People who ain't got no, if you decide to buy a gun because you could put your Legos on it, you ain't no real killer. You know what that means? You gonna kill somebody over something dumb one day.
Well, what's even like more sinister about it is that it disguises it so it doesn't give it the appearance of a gun. So it can be brought to places and then it's like, oh snap, that's a real gun.
Yeah. Well, have I, ever told you the story about the time a dude I went to college with, I was driving behind him on the back street after a basketball game, and my alma mater was not in the safest part of town. But these cats was like, as cars were going by, they were slapping people's cars, just being jerks. And this dude, who ain't have no G in him whatsoever, he got out the car and was like, yo, don't slap my car. And he started arguing with the dudes. And I'm like, dog, you know, I don't think you want to do this. And I'm like, what is that in your hand? And then I hear the dude on the porch being like, hey, dawg, you can go ahead and put your little old pistol away. He had like a little 22 in his hand. Let me tell you, man, he's like, and the dude was like 6'5". You can't be 6'5 out here brandishing no 22. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not. I went with a woman once who was buying a gun, and she was at a pawn shop, and they pulled out the little 22, and it was pink, right? I think it was called the Lady Smith or something like that, right? Like, just, I'm just telling you, man, you ain't scaring nobody with your 22. That's just not really how it works. Now, imagine you pull a gun on somebody that got Legos on it. You're going to get your ass whooped with a gun in your hand, just like I almost saw that dude do. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk so long, but you understand. This is just so preposterous to me.
All right. This next story comes from entertainment.
This is Matt Kim from IGN. Netflix confirmed it has hired video game executive Mike Verdue to lead a new gaming-focused department at the streaming company. Verdue will serve as vice president of game development at Netflix, though the company declined to elaborate on Verdue's exact duties and responsibilities. Verdu was previously an executive at Facebook Oculus, where he was in charge of attracting developers and games to Facebook's VR ecosystem. Prior to that, Verdu was at the video game company EA, where he managed the company's mobile game studios and oversaw popular titles like SimCity, Plants vs. Zombie 2, and more. Netflix did not elaborate further on whether this signals a move towards original game development, and if so, how Netflix would even deliver the games to subscribers. It is possible Netflix could utilize cloud streaming technology like its rivals at Google Stadia, Amazon, and Xbox. In the past, Netflix has flirted with interactive fiction with shows like Bandersnatch, a Black Mirror special where viewers can make different choices throughout the episode for a different outcome. Netflix also adapted Minecraft Story Mode, a video game developed by Telltale, into a similar interactive adventure show.
That's the next level of the game.
I remember Gamefly back in the day in the DVD mailer.
Yes.
You know, people give me a hard time. I'm still one of those DVD mailer customers for Netflix.
Oh, you still do that?
I still do that, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you would think about that, and not to make this a PSA for Netflix, but the DVD mailers, you can get pretty much every movie in the history of the planet, whereas like only on the streaming, you know, a segment of the library.
Interesting. I was just wondering, like, who was still using DVDs? I'm not even shading you. I just didn't know it was you.
When you got the PlayStation, you could play the DVDs. You don't have to have a DVD player.
Great point. Hit him with the finger on the temple. All right, there we go. Like you talk about revelatory. There it is right there. Gabe is still swapping out DVDs with Netflix. I'm not responsible enough. That thing would just be at my house. It'll never go back.
But back to the story at hand here. Video games for Netflix. Are you a video game player, Bo?
Not at this point in my life.
So then you're not going to be in on playing video games on Netflix, though.
No, because the last thing I want to do is get on the internet and your little cousin calling me racial slurs just because I want to play a video game. You know what I'm saying? It's a bit of a hassle.
Yeah, we just have to make sure that them getting into the video game is not going to make them kind of lax on the streaming.
Ah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
They got to focus on their priorities.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Eyes on the prize, baby. Eyes on the prize.
This last story comes from Metro.
Hi, I'm Suki Lewis. I'm a criminal justice reporter for NPR member station KQED. We have obtained never-before-heard tapes from the investigation into the police killing of Oscar Grant. The tapes provide new details about the missteps made by investigators in the early hours and days after a Bay Area Rapid Transit police officer named Johannes Messerly shot Grant on New Year's Day 2009. It was one of the first times that a police shooting was caught on cell phone video, and the footage was circulated around the country and around the world. It led to huge protests. And Oscar Grant was later portrayed by Michael B. Jordan in a movie about the incident called Fruitvale Station. But until KQED sued the transit agency to force the release of these files, no one, including Oscar Grant's family, had heard how the shooting was investigated. Johannes Messerly was eventually convicted of involuntary manslaughter for shooting Grant, but the released tapes raise new questions about his defense, that he meant to pull his taser, not his gun. The tapes also focus attention on another officer who was never criminally charged for his role in the incident, Tony Peroni. An internal investigation done by an outside law firm found that his aggressive and even brutal actions that night created the chaotic atmosphere and the situation that led to the shooting. That same firm also found that Peroni's statements about his grounds for detaining Grant, his own actions and uses of force, shifted across multiple interviews and were contradicted by witness and video evidence. My co-reporter Sandhya Dirks and I took a deep look at this case for the final episode of the KQED and NPR podcast, On Our Watch. To hear more about this story, please listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
So this is something I always say about the Oscar Grant case that people might not remember. When Messerly was sentenced, do you happen to remember what else was going on that day? The decision. It was the same day as the decision. Right. So it was basically kind of like it didn't even happen. It was a thing. This is before we was mad online all the time. You know what I'm saying? And so it happened and it just kind of went away because it was on a really, really busy day. Like it's kind of like Chandra Levy, the woman that was believed to be dating the congressperson and died on September 10th, 2001. Like this was that thing. That I remember that case was just so harrowing. I haven't watched the movies because you guys know I don't do recreational sadness. You can tell them, Gabe, I ain't about that wallow. You know, I'm just, that's not really like the activity that I like to engage in. But it was just such a heinous thing, like when it happened at the time. And I'm hearing what the reporters saying that they discovered in these tapes, and it's just no shock. And like the problem is, cops care more about being cops than they care about justice. Like, that's an indisputable fact. Like, I don't think I'm saying anything remotely controversial. If it comes down to doing what's right and saving their homeboy's job, they'll save their homeboy's job unless they're, no, even then, because if their homeboy trying to uproot their corruption, they'll get homeboy out of there, right? Like, we need a few good cops. A few good cops get devoured by bad ones every single time, because the bad ones, whether you want to admit it or not, at least in terms of power, outweigh the good ones. Simple as that. That's where we are. So, yeah, I'm going to check that podcast out, and I encourage you to do the same.
Just talking about good cops and all that sort of stuff. I'm into a rewatch of The Wire right now.
Hey, did you, in season one, when Prez roughed that kid up, right? Pistol whipped him at the project. But do you remember where he was in? I think he was the one, or somebody, it may have been his boss, was in there talking about how they were going to handle it. And they're like, oh, maybe it'll go to the grand jury. And I think it was Daniels was like, well, what if the grand jury indicts? They're like, they won't.
And he's still with the unit, like it isn't a big deal.
Yep. Everybody knows the game, man. Everybody knows the game. And if that cop mess around and do something like that, they all feel like, hey, I might accidentally shoot somebody one day. And so they play the game of lookout because, hey, for the grace of God, there goes I.
The little kid that he beat up was in the like investigative unit in the room, and he couldn't even look him in the eye.
Nope. How could he? How could I mean, and when you say look him in the eye, you mean the one good one he had left. Little homie was in there looking like a pirate.
I said the eye, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm about to say, that is a figure of speech. He only had what? He was in there, arr, shiver me timbers. There's the man who messed up my peeper. It's a character, so I get to tell jokes.
Yeah, I don't think that kid ever dreamed he was going to be a pirate.
Hey, you never know. I love to leave Baltimore and go upon the high seas. They got boats out there.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. People need a little fun. They need a little fun right there. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So voicemails this week. Bad haircuts. Worst haircuts you've ever received. What was the inspiration for this topic?
Oh, yeah, simple. Bad haircut ain't your fault, so people will share those stories. And share they did.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you just got a haircut recently, and your hair looks good.
Yeah, I had to say, I was like, I don't think I got one. Like, I wasn't talking about me. I mean, if I had a bad haircut, man, I'd be in here with a hat on. I'd be out here looking like Cam Newton, Smokey the Bear, you know what I'm saying?
I thought what the inspiration was that you got a haircut, weren't happy with it, and had to go back and had to get it fixed.
Yeah, nah. Although me and my dad used to joke, he said he'd walk up to somebody and be like, yo, I'll go with you. What you mean? I'll go with you. What you mean? Go get your money back for that haircut.
But we did get a bunch of good ones, like he said. Our first comes from Mars in Mo City.
I had a buddy back in high school named Justin. He's on baseball team or whatever, right? And he the black dude on the baseball team. You know what that means. So he show up to school one day, his lineup fresh. And I'm like, all right. You look all right, but I feel like they done pushed you back a little bit, bro. And he's like, nah, it's all right. Then he starts showing up the next day and the next day. And as the week go on, slowly, I'm starting to see a shadow on the front of his forehead. Man, by Friday, I realized they had pushed his lineup back like an inch on top of his head, dog. And he ain't even bothered to grow it back out to fix it. He was just going to the barbershop and let it push it back again every single time. And he would just show up, and within like 4 or 5 days, you looking at an inch thick shadow on his forehead where his lineup's supposed to be. It was sick, dog. That's what happens when you're the black dude on the baseball team. Ain't nobody around to tell you no better.
Oh, my God. I wish I knew what high school this dude went to, because he's from Mo City. So, like, Willow Ridge High School is what I associate with Mo City. And at Willow Ridge, there'd be somebody to tell them. But they got some other high schools around there. You know, Willow Ridge, I guess, existed so that the other schools would look like Willow Ridge. You know what I'm saying? And so I tell you this, though, the black dude on the baseball team at my school, man, that dude used to let them call him Shadow. Yeah. But I love this. Like, he got in there. My man was so passionate about that haircut, and it wasn't even his own. He was so passionate.
This next one comes from Mike in Chicago.
Worst haircut I have, 1985, July 23rd, a month before my birthday, I had the flyest Jerry curl. I went to the barbershop to get a line, and this fool cut all my Jerry curl off my head. When I say fool, his name was Donnell Smith at Goldie's Barbershop, 5009 West Chicago Avenue, 773-251-3224. Donnell Smith messed up the best Jerry curl that a man could ever have. He cut me bald, Bo. Cut it to the side so low, messed me up. I was looking like a fool. And you know you can't rock no bald head in Chicago when you got the flyest hairstyle. But Bo, ever since he cut me bald, I've been bald. I had the best Jerry curl, the best plastic cap with the Jerry curl, and the spray bottle with it. But now, he cut me bald. Donnell Smith at Goldie's Barbershop back in 1985, Bo. My hair was flat until I let Donnell Smith mess me up. Have a good one, Bo.
See, Gabe, this is a thing that you don't know about my man Mike Hitman. Just as a GP understanding, you need to understand that if Mike gonna call somebody out, he gonna call you out with your name, first and last, your address, and a relevant phone number. That is Mike. That is Mike. Please understand this, that in 1985, the 773 area code did not exist, which is to say that Mike put in the effort to go find out the new, just in case you want to call them and ask them why they did Mike Hitman the way that they did Mike Hitman. And I need to get a picture of Mike with that Jerry curl. I haven't talked to Mike in so long. Mike, I apologize. It's just been a minute. I need to talk to Mike. I love that guy. Like, I sincerely love that dude.
Yeah, somebody has to check to see if Donnell Smith is still working at Goldie's Barbershop in West Chicago.
He's not having it.
This last one comes from Keith in Ontario.
What up, Gabe? What up, Bo? I'm actually mad at Bo for posing this one online because he made me relive a trauma I was not ready to. But for the sake of the show and the fans, I'll let y'all have the story. I was about 10 years old. You know, I'm half black, half Mexican. I never really had a true haircut up to this point. I'd just been going to, like, Fantastic Sam's and whatnot.
Oh, no.
So one day, I need a haircut. My dad decides he can do it. Oh. I, not knowing any better, assuming, you know, haircuts seem pretty easy. Just get the clippers. You good? I said, okay, and let him do it. About halfway in, this man is cackling, pretty much looking at me, and gives up. Looks at my sister, gives her some money, and says, take him to go get this fixed. Bo, when I tell you what I saw in the mirror made me cry and cry and cry. When we went to the barber shop, the stylist looked at me in horror and said, there's no way your hair grew in this crooked, is it? Mm-hmm. To this day, I'm 30 years old. To this day, it still gets talked about in my house. It was awful.
The pain in that man's voice. I'll never forget this. This is, I don't really have a bad haircut story myself, but I remember some for my freshman year of college, I did a summer program and I was sitting there with my homeboy Kane and this dude DJ came in. DJ had a hat on. He had, you know, he was like a preppy type dude. So he's like, you know, like the Hilfiger rugby shirt type, you know, situation, 1997. And so he come in and he got like the khaki cap, you know what I'm saying? And he's like, yo, man, I messed up my haircut, dog. I was like, oh, damn, really? You know, and he seemed really down about it. And I'm like, man, it can't be that bad. Dog, he took off that haircut, and I ain't never going to question nobody else again. When they try to tell me that their haircut bad, it looked like they cut his shit like a potato peeler. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just seemed uneven and everything else. And he was like, what do you think? And while I'm trying to come up with something to say, my man Kay just jumped in with, looks good. And after DJ left, I looked at Kane like, oh, why you tell him that? He's like, what else was I supposed to tell him? And it's like, you know what? You're right. Because it wasn't going to fix nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, making him feel worse. Wasn't going to do nothing about it. I guess he decided he wasn't going to go bald. DJ was also the dude for the legendary story of somebody cutting off the power in the dorm one time. And somebody said that DJ did it. I have no idea if DJ did it. But then a horde of people, then because some people had like lost their papers. It's 97. We ain't got flash RAM. Like they working on their paper and the paper gets, you know, messed up or whatever. And so it's a horde of people outside, and sort of including one dude who I recall being like legitimately crazy, who then sends somebody to fetch his boots from downstairs so he could kick DJ's door down. And someone got his boots, and one kick didn't do it, but the second kick did, and he did kick DJ's door down, but DJ wasn't there. His whole boy, Old Face Terrence, was there, and he was sitting in the window, understandably terrified, as what looked like a lynch mob was outside his door, and Terrence just said, "I didn't do it, I didn't do it," and jumped out the second floor window. Well, I would say never to be seen again, except I did see him one more time, and he was standing on the yard, and I just kept on walking, but I heard the conversation he was having with some girl involved. I'm just saying, man, you know, you got people making people jump out of windows. I was like, hey, man, you got a point. Hard for me to knock you. Unfortunate set of circumstances.
Old Face is still one of the best nicknames.
Oh, yeah, it's faithful. He had a real old face. He had a real old face. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Welcome back and thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thank you to Bill Chappell of NPR. Check out his story on a gun covered with Legos. Seriously. Also, thanks to Matt Kim of IGN. Check out his story about Netflix making video games. And thank you to Sookie Lewis of NPR. Please check out their new show, On Our Watch. Talk about the Bay Area Rapid Transit Authority's investigation into the murder of Oscar Grant. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.